Every year, the multi-billion dollar proceeds of organized crime are pumped into the global economy, a torrent of dirty cash that's laundered through the banking system to disguise its origins. Keen to know how it's done, two journalists began to investigate one alleged route through which the Italian mafia hides its money. But as the second of this three-episode report reveals, getting into this maze is easier than finding a way out.
The story at the heart of these films is an enigma, wrapped in riddles, buried in mysteries. It's about money laundering and much else besides. But, as explained in part one, as we tried to unravel its complexities, our investigation kept on taking unexpected twists and turns. Between 2016 and 2018, an Italian police investigation in the city of Palmi in southern Italy uncovered a complex network of offshore companies, assets of dubious origin, and suspicious financial transactions.
Lo scopo delle organizzazioni criminali di tipo mafioso è quello di operare nel mondo della finanza.
According to police wiretap recordings, the man at the center of the investigation, an IT entrepreneur called Roberto Ricordare, was preparing to launder hundreds of billions of euros belonging to the mafia, to which he was said to belong. He denies all these allegations. But a closer look into the police files revealed that at least some of the assets allegedly controlled by Ricordare were highly unusual. They appeared to be part of a secret, parallel banking system, a bizarre network of deposits, which Ricordare and his associates referred to collectively as the White Spiritual Boy accounts. As we dug deeper, we found that these accounts were somehow connected to two men. One of them died decades ago, Sergio Contessa, a former moneylender on the fringes of the Monte Carlo Casino, who was murdered in 1989. The other man was named Dimitri Vertl, but we couldn't yet prove whether he'd ever existed at all.
Questo è il suo vero nome, ok? E poi c'è altri cinque passaporti.
Whoever the mysterious Dimitri Vertl was, he certainly wasn't the man in the passport photo we'd been shown by Sergio Contessa's son Maurizio. That picture, we later discovered, was actually that of a long-dead Russian movie director, Andrei Tarkovsky. While we tried to make sense of this ambiguity, others kept crowding into the story. In May 2021, while going through the Ricordare wiretap transcripts, we saw that in late 2017, he'd referred to a banking transaction so large that, in his own words, it could upset the balance of the global economy. The transaction was purported to move funds from Germany to Malaysia into the account of a local company called Power Gateway Capital. In trying to find out what this could mean, our researchers then threw up a remarkable coincidence, which we had found, but the Italian police seemed to have missed. In a completely unconnected police investigation in Kiev, Ukraine, details of what seemed to be the same huge transaction appeared in the computers of a local group of forgers arrested between February and August 2018. The files also reveal the size of the proposed transaction. It simply defied belief. 2 trillion euros. That's a sum bigger than the GDP of all but the world's richest nations. Surely, this had to be a scam, or an error. No group of individuals could ever be involved in a transaction so large. But as we were about to dismiss it, we came across something else in the Ricordare transcripts. In November 2017, just a few months before the date of the transaction, Ricordare had paid a fixer to obtain a Ukrainian passport with his photograph on it. But the name on the document was not his own. It was a name we had heard before.
Алло?
Костянтин Булатович?
Да.
Я просто смотрю, к нам попали документы, паспорт украинский. И вот ваш персональный номер, это же дата рождения, только паспорт принадлежит другому человеку. Ну, тут человек называется Дмитрий Веретчилтылы. Паспорт фейковый.
Нет, ну, здесь документы же знаете, как оно у нас тут интернет. Там в банке что-то, ну, кредиты подписываем и все остальное прочее, где-то эти данные.
Угу.
Вот видите, всегда.
An alleged Italian money launderer buying a passport number issued to a Ukrainian folk dancer. Using a name we'd last seen on a fake passport bearing the photo of a dead movie director. Added to the strange coincidence we'd found involving an impossibly large banking transaction, it was clear that we had much to follow up in Ukraine. In December 2021, with the shadow of war looming over the country, together with Elena Longinova, an investigative journalist from Kiev, we set out to look for the suspected forgers. This is what we knew. Between February and August 2018, the Ukrainian police raided the properties of three suspects and seized documents related to dozens of alleged banking transactions between tens of companies scattered across the world. One of them was our 2 trillion euro transfer. We'd learned that the three main suspects in the Ukrainian case were a Russian private security officer called Edward, a Ukrainian bank official known as Yuri Katran, and an Armenian actor called Aram.
I know only about the documentation God sent me Katran and say all this. I find the investment, the money is coming, help me, give me the money, because a little 1, 2, 3 months later, I will be rich man. He just organized this swift story only for steal the money. Bring my advice. Try to find Katran.
Aram said he'd never heard of Roberto Ricordare. He claimed that Yuri Katran produced documents of fake banking transactions to show that he had the money to repay loans that he'd taken out. Tracking down Yuri might help us to understand if this was the case and what connection, if any, there was between himself and Roberto Ricordare. We found an address for Yuri on the internet, but when no one answered the doorbell, we left a message with our telephone number. We then set out to find the third suspect in the case, Edward the Russian. According to what he told us on the telephone, Edward worked in private security for Russian oil companies. He said he'd see us in Chernivtsi, a small town in southern Ukraine, near the border with Romania. We agreed to not show his face on camera.
Мы анализировали все. Это моя. Я должен был доказать, что я не имею к этому отношения. Дело в том, что анализируя вот эти компании, я могу сказать, что никогда через них не могли пройти деньги. Почему? Есть определенный спектр вопросов по деятельности каждой фирмы. И ни один банк бы не пропустил вот такую цифру засветить. Но вы понимаете, что.
After being arrested, said Edward, he used his connections in private security to investigate the dozens of companies and individuals found in the documents seized by police. What he found was that the companies named in the documents were mostly empty shells, and that their directors were often figureheads or unknowing victims of identity theft. One of the companies was called Marimba Finance Limited, the UK entity identified in the Ukrainian court documents as being on the sending end of the mysterious 2 trillion euro transaction. According to Edward, Marimba's CEO was a German national called Mencken Ernst Uwe. Like others who've looked for him, we have not yet been able to track him down.
Таким образом, что я, что касается этой Маримбы, то человек находится в бегах уже 15 лет, живет в монастыре, а его паспорт гуляет по целому миру с кучей подписей.
According to company's house records in the UK, Marimba Finance Limited was only active from January 2017 to June 2018. But that window included the date of the attempted 2 trillion euro transaction, February 22, 2018. In the London listing, the firm's only named director was a Slovenian national called Fabi Lipovaca. Edward couldn't or wouldn't tell us more about Marimba and its directors and, like Aram, he claimed never to have heard of anyone called Roberto Recordare. Nor could he offer any explanation why the scam that at least one of the three had allegedly been trying to pull off seemed identical to the money transactions described in Recordare's wiretapped conversations in Italy. This might not be so surprising. Though now on hold because of the war, the fraud prosecution against the three men is still outstanding, and they are unwilling to put themselves in more jeopardy. But then, before we left him, Edward let slip something very intriguing.
В Європі существує банк, мертвий. Це счета мафіози, це счета наркокартелі. Ті, які ніхто не прийдеться їх відбувати. От туди лезуть всі спецслужбы, которые могут. Из тех документов, которые я, допустим, нарыл, накопал, есть один момент, который связан с швейцарской компанией и итальянской. Итальянец, наркобарон.
While flying back to Kiev from Chernivtsi, Edward sent us a message telling us the name of the Italian drug boss he mentioned in the interview, Cosimo Damiano Tassone. We later learned that back in Italy, Tassone, just like Recordare, was suspected of being connected to the 'Ndrangheta, the mafia organization from the region of Calabria. In 2015, Tassone was arrested during a mammoth drug bust of almost 1,000 kilograms of cocaine. He was later convicted. What, if anything, was his connection to Roberto Recordare? Or to the Ukrainians? So far, the only clear response we'd got from Aram and Edward was that whatever the alleged gang of forgers was up to, Yuri Catran had been the one to blame. Then, Yuri finally answered his phone.
Алло, Юрій. Ну, ми зустрічалися з Едуардом. Він сказав, що ну, ви відсилали йому документи, начебто підробляли їх. Хочемо почути вашу історію.
Едуардо, він мені присилав ці бумажки для того, щоб я посмотрел і сказав, это реальные или нереальные. Я исправлял там, где нереально, ну, где ошибки были, и делал свое заключение, что это фальшивки. Правильно, здесь неправильно. Все, до свидания.
Each of the three suspects admitted that the documents were part of a scam, but each said someone else in the group was responsible, and none of them admitted to knowing what it was meant to achieve. We wrote to Deutsche Bank and to Simbank to ask them about the transaction. Deutsche Bank replied that the operation transaction described did not take place and is a fake. Deutsche Bank has no business or customer relations with the companies or persons mentioned. As for Simbank, they answered that local Malaysian legislation prohibits them from revealing information about their clients. So to find out more, we went in search of the London-listed director of Marimba Finance Limited, a Slovenian engineer called Fadi Lipovaca. We found him in Slovenia's capital, Ljubljana.
Let me show you something. This is a Ukrainian document, okay, mm-hmm. from the Kiev court.
Kiev court.
See, it says, agreement on delivery of cash funds for investments. So we have a first party, which is Marimba Finance Limited and Deutsche Bank. And these two companies, Power Gateway Capital and TIS Investments Hong Kong. In the company registry, mm-hmm. it says that Marimba is registered under your name.
Yes.
This is supposed to be you, although
yes,
the name
but
is
the
different.
The name is different, yes. One, my friend, called me and informed about similar agreement, not this one for two trillion, signed from this Marimba company with my passport. That's how I find out that my passport was used for fake. It is interesting paper, I never see this before, because this company, uh-huh. it belonged to this Slobodan Trbojevic. Only Trbojevic had my passport copies.
According to the Hong Kong company's registry, the company owned by Slobodan Trbojevic, TIS Investments Hong Kong, was active from November 2016 to November 2020. Fadil said that he and Trbojevic were once business partners, and that's probably how the latter obtained Fadil's passport.
Who was this Slobodan Trbojevic?
his doctor, Henkel doctor. Okay. So it is not the person which is from the street.
Okay.
But how he came in this business, in such business, I don't know.
So you still have contact with
no.
Slobodan,
no,
like
no.
a phone number or something that we can try to...
I will try reach him on Skype. Neither.
What does that mean?
Neither. He is not available. He has a brain attack. And once time after that I spoke to him by phone. He was so sick, and he speak so hard that maybe he died also.
So had alleged mafia money launderer Roberto Ricordare been the hidden mastermind behind all these complicated and highly questionable company arrangements? And if so, to what end? If Marimba Finance Limited was indeed a shell company incorporated under a stolen identity, as everyone we'd spoken to seemed to be claiming, TIS Investments Hong Kong was an equally mysterious entity with no apparent track record on the internet. Of its mysterious owner, the Serbian-sounding Slobodan Turbojevic, there were few other traces. As for the second receiving company in the Ukrainian operation, Power Gateway Capital of Malaysia, registration documents from the local company's commission say that an Italian called Pasquale Corbisiero, whom we were also unable to reach, became a significant shareholder in the company in December 2017, just 2 months before the date on the 2 trillion euro transaction. Further scrutiny of the Italian police surveillance files on Roberto Ricordare revealed that a Pasquale Corbisiero sent this document to Ricordare in October 2017. The document described the steps needed to open a correspondence account in Sim Bank Malaysia in the name of a little-known banking institute based in Tajikistan, Central Asia, called Orion Bank. The ever-resourceful Ricordare managed to contact the Tajikistan bank through the offices of an Afghan emigre living in Sicily at the time. The man, who claims to be well-connected to banks across Central Asia, is Abdul Sattar Shafiqullah, also known as Shafiq. Puzzled by all these complex financial dealings, we managed to track him down to ask him what he and Ricordare had been up to.
I met this guy, Roberto, that he's also a financier, he has money and he has intentions to make some investments. So then I took him to Afghanistan. We had several meetings with different investors in Afghanistan.
Did they ever sign a contract?
Several contracts. It was signed there with the Pakistani company, with the Tajik company, with the Afghan company, two Afghan companies. But he tried several times, and he was telling me that he's making transfers. But unfortunately, when we were checking with the bank, they were saying, no, we have nothing. I had good relations in Tajikistan. So I went to the Orient Bank, and he had several meetings with them. And after that, Mr. Roberto registered a company there with the government in Tajikistan. And after registration, they signed, I think, contracts with the Orient Bank for the gold mine there. So that was around 300 million, which I do remember.
Roberto signed a contract with Orient Bank because Orient Bank, you said, owns a gold mine. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they have a gold mine in Badakhshan province.
Uh-huh.
And they were bidding for that to get from the government. And they signed a mutual agreement that if, like a joint venture, that if Mr. Roberto make an investment on that project, Orient Bank is ready to get that project from the government.
Was there any kind of due diligence that was done?
Roberto, I think he showed a lot of documents to the Orient Bank, even that he gave a lot of documents to them, and they were convinced that he has this capability to make the investments. So with the passage of 2-3 years, he sent several swift documents that he did this transfer, but never happened, nothing.
Nothing ever arrived. No money ever arrived.
Yes, and then the bank told me it's fake. There's nothing, so it's better to stop the bridge.
According to Shafiq, he and Roberto Ricordare traveled across Central Asia together, collecting contracts for supposed future investment projects worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Shafiq said that Ricordare showed documents attesting to his incredible wealth to convince the companies that he had the money needed to invest. Was there a connection between these documents and the 2 trillion euro fraudulent transaction that the Ukrainian police had discovered? In order to find out, we wrote to Orion Bank asking them to confirm or deny the circumstances described by our sources, but they didn't reply. In November 2022, after trying and failing several times, we managed to convince Ricordare to talk to us. As we set off to Calabria, we wondered, would he finally give up his secrets?
Intanto ci spieghi chi è lei e qual è il suo lavoro, insomma, di cosa si occupa.
Io mi occupo di informatica dall'84. Questo è il core business.
Quindi la parte, diciamo, di consulenza finanziaria, quando è che entra in gioco?
Si avvalgono di me per in molti campi, diciamo. Presto la mia conoscenza in questo ambito, perché poi il sistema bancario, l'informatica, diciamo, fa da padrone. Poi
in un paese dell'est europeo vengono sequestrati una lista di transazioni. Una di queste operazioni in qualche modo ci riporta a lei.
Sì, qui abbiamo, diciamo, questa operazione del 22 febbraio 2018. Non so se la riconosce, c'è in mezzo c'è la SIMB, ci sta la Power Gateway, c'è in mezzo la Deutsche Bank.
Ah sì, ma questa qua non c'entra niente.
Questa non la conosce, questa no. Transazione
allora,
qui.
Un passo indietro, però lei a fine 2017 sta cercando di organizzare un'operazione che riguarda la Orient Bank in Tagikistan, no? Quindi anche con il soggetto afghano, tagico, insomma, Shafiqullah.
Abbiamo cercato di aprire un conto di corrispondenza in CIMB, ma poi non è stato aperto.
Questo riguarda anche, per esempio, la miniera d'oro in Tagikistan? Cioè, stesso tipo di...
Non c'è nessuna miniera d'oro in Tagikistan.
Però Shafiqullah, no. Così mi ha detto.
Una miniera d'oro in Tagikistan?
Lui dice che c'era questa miniera d'oro sul confine tra il Tagikistan e l'Afghanistan e che voi siete andati lì offrendo un finanziamento di 300 milioni.
Ah, una miniera d'oro? A me dalla miniera non risulta.
Nell'indagine che la polizia di Palmi effettua sul suo conto, no, si fa riferimento al fatto che lei sia appunto un broker che gestisce fondi legati alla criminalità organizzata. Si parla di cifre di 500 miliardi di euro.
Ma se io riciclavo 500 miliardi, mi avrebbero accostato e buttato la chiave.
Ricordare denied any ties with the 'Ndrangheta or with laundering their money. He insisted he was just a businessman. Instead, he claimed to be authorized to access the mysterious white spiritual boy network of accounts and to be allowed to invest the next to infinite riches found therein.
I documenti parlano di white spiritual boy e le varie altre denominazioni, no? Che cosa sono questa rete globale di conti?
Il problema è sempre quando si parla di queste cose, di sono cose fantastiche, diciamo, no? Purtroppo è difficile anche crederci, no? E lo so, io so che è difficile, però ci sono.
Once again, these often mentioned but mysterious bank deposits, the strangely named white spiritual boy accounts, had forced their way into our investigation. But what were they? Did the accounts truly exist? Or were they being aggrandized by Ricordare to convince companies seeking investors that he had access to unlimited funds, or perhaps even to obscure the real source of mafia money entering the banking system? We felt we were getting closer to the truth, but we knew we'd have to go back to Ricordare for answers. But first, our investigation had one last shocking twist. If the story had been baffling up to this point, it was about to get even more so.
I have been appointed as a joint mandate holder of a heritage fund known as White Spiritual Boy Trust.
How do all these threads pull together?
Find out as we travel next to South Africa in the remarkable concluding episode of this People in Power investigation.